Welcome, everyone, to Creating a Family, Talk About Infertility. I'm Dawn Davenport. I'm your host, and I'm the director of Creating a Family. And listen up, guys, we are more than just a podcast. We also have a website full of information for you, and you can find all that information at creatingafamily.org. So head on over. Today, we're going to be talking about a very topical topic, is the impact of COVID-19 on surrogacy. We get a lot of questions about this for good reason, because it's absolutely having an impact. We're going to be talking today with Dr. Barry Witt. He is the medical director of Wynn Fertility and Greenwich Fertility. He is a board-certified reproductive endocrinologist who has been offering reproductive care for more than 25 years. Welcome, Dr. Witt, to Creating a Family, and thank you for joining us to help us unpack how this pandemic is impacting those families who are trying to create their, or those patients or intended parents who are trying to create their family through surrogacy.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So my first question, because I don't think we can, I think it helps to lay the basics, because I think there's actually a fair amount of misunderstanding about what we mean when we say surrogates or surrogacy. So let's talk about how surrogacy is practiced in the U.S. But let's start with a distinction between, and these are the terms that we use, you know, in professional circles, but people, average folk who are listening don't really understand the distinction here. So I want to start with the distinction between gestational surrogate and a traditional surrogate, and then we'll move into how we practice surrogacy in the U.S.
Sure. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of confusion, I think, because the word surrogacy is used interchangeably for both. Mm-hmm. The reality is that traditional surrogacy is rarely used in this country, because it's basically genetic surrogacy. The woman who carries the pregnancy is also the genetic mother, because it's her egg. Mm-hmm. So traditionally, that was done before IVF, where the woman was inseminated with the intended parent's sperm, and then carried the baby, and then the baby was, you know, genetically related to the carrier. Mm-hmm. So that's really not done very often anymore. Most of the surrogacy that's done is gestational surrogacy, or we call gestational carriers, which is a woman who's not related genetically to the baby. And it's done through IVF, where embryos are created by an intended parent couple, or, you know, at least with an egg from not from the carrier. That embryo is put into the carrier, and so the genetic relationship. So that's what we do. Pretty much genetic, non-genetic carriers, or so it's not traditional surrogacy.
Of the, and you may not know the answer to this, I've often wondered this, of those of patients going through or choosing surrogacy, gestational surrogate, where the surrogate is not genetically related, her egg is not involved. And so an embryo is being created in an infertility center. Do you have an idea of the percentage of those embryos are created using the egg of the intended mom, the family that is going to have the baby, not the carrier? Is it her egg or donor egg? And then the same question, I guess, with sperm, although I think with sperm, it's more, I think more often it is the intended father's sperm that is being used. Do you happen to know what percentage are donor eggs and what a percentage are the actual eggs of the intended mom?
Well, it really depends on why the intended parents are using a gestational carrier. So, for instance, if it's a male same-sex couple or a single male, there is no option
right
other than donor egg. For couples, or, you know, where there's a woman who's needs to use a carrier for a variety of reasons, it's usually her egg. So the reasons why a woman might require a carrier is either because of a uterus problem, they don't have a uterus, or they have a uterus that's abnormal in some way, either congenitally abnormal or as a result of scarring, or, you know, someone's had a hysterectomy for cancer or whatever. So the absence of a uterus or an abnormal uterus, or if there's a medical condition that the woman has that pregnancy, like it's too high risk, pulmonary hypertension or severe, you know, medical problems. So in those situations, it's usually the egg of the woman who's the intended parent. So it really depends on which group. Obviously, it's 100% if it's a homosexual male couple, and it's but you know, it's mostly, I would say the majority is their own egg when it's not related to that.
Unless, of course, there's an age issue and she and her eggs are not viable. Okay. Right, so right. So let's say that there is any number, the demographics could include, as you point out, gay couples, single dads, single moms, depending, of course, on the age of the woman and her infertility history, as well as heterosexual couples. So given all that, if somebody, if any of these demographics wants to consider surrogacy, what is their first step? How do you find a surrogate in the U.S.?
I think most intended parents who are looking for a carrier use an agency to do that. There's a number of commercial agencies out there who are readily available. If you go online and search surrogacy, you'll find them. And they're very professional groups. Some of them who that's all they do is, serve as agencies to recruit carriers. And they have, some of them have, an interdisciplinary approach where they have, counselors and nurses and so people who can identify who appropriate carriers are from a variety of standpoints. And the major ones would be that these are women who have successfully been pregnant and delivered before, don't have significant risks of no medical issues or previous obstetrical issues. And then there's, psychosocial things that need to be identified. So some of these agencies are very good at identifying potential carriers. So most people will use agencies. There are some intended parents who will use a known carrier where they have somebody they know, a sister or friend or relative, and they don't necessarily have to go through an agency. They just require, attorneys to draw up contracts and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I think the majority of the patients that I see go through agencies.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because not that many people know somebody who is able and willing to carry a pregnancy Absolutely. For them. I'm really glad, just as an aside, that you mentioned, if you're going with an agency, they're going to handle or make sure, but almost always they're going to be handling the legal. But if you're trying to do it on your own, by all means, have an attorney that specializes in reproductive law involved, because you really do need to be careful of the of making sure that everything is done the way it's supposed to be done and the contracts are drawn up the way they're supposed to be drawn up and things such as that.
And it's also very important as far as the location of the carrier, because in the United States, it's a state by state law as to the legality of contractual surrogacy. Meaning that it's based on a contract. And so if it's in a state that's not friendly to carriers and won't give a pre-birth order and adoption is required, that would not be an ideal state to be doing this. So those are things that attorneys are very well
exactly
sure that things are done appropriately.
Exactly. So yes, it's not legal in all states and you need to make certain that where you are and where the surrogate is, that everything is legal. And that's why you need an attorney or an agency who is going to be holding your hand.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Absolutely. So that's how a surrogate is found. And then you would be working with a reproductive endocrinologist, which is a doctor that specializes in infertility, to do IVF and then to do the actual transfer. So is it possible we hear about people, Americans, going abroad to find surrogates. Is that possible?
It's definitely possible. I'm sure it's done, although, frankly, I think it's more common these days for people from other countries to come here. Mm-hmm. I think the major reason why people go to other countries is because of cost. Mm-hmm. The cost of using a gestational carrier in the U.S. is probably between $100,000 and $150,000. And if certain countries where it's legal to do this, you can do that for much less, 50% or more or less in countries like India or, Georgia or whatever. So there are lesser expensive alternatives. Obviously, there's other concerns that come up, as far as the medical care and the difficulties of doing things internationally. But I think, even the other way around has become much more common for intended parents from other countries wanting to come to the US to do this, because there are reasons why many countries it's not even legal. So in Europe, there's a number of countries where it's not legal to use a gestational carrier. And so countries like France, Italy, I mean, they'll seek out places in the United States to do this. There's also issues related to, you know, the sexual orientation, like as far as same-sex couples or single parents. Some countries, it's illegal to do that, and they have no choice but to come to the United States for that. And I think the medical care in the U.S. as far as IVF and success rates are looked at it very favorably from international patients. And I think they, you know, oftentimes will choose the United States because they know they're more likely to be successful as well.
Mm-hmm. And that they know that the surrogate is going to be getting good medical care, both from the infertility standpoint, but also during her pregnancy. Do you happen to know the predominant countries where people are coming from to the United States?
I think it's, well, there's definitely a large Asian population. I know on the West Coast, many programs cater to China, some Asian countries. And on the East Coast, we tend to see more from Europe and some from the Middle East. But you know, I think it's variable depending on where in the United States you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you mentioned going abroad, that you mentioned some of the countries that people often go to. India is certainly one. I've heard Georgia. There are other countries in Eastern Europe that I have heard of. And in addition, I just wanted to throw out their cost. I think you're right, is the predominant reason that when people go, that the predominant reason we hear here at Creating a Family is that they're going for cost. And sometimes also because they're combining donor egg at the same time. So it's a combined cost. So there's they feel like it's substantial. But one, in addition to some of the reasons you mentioned, I'd also like to throw out that there's another concern. Some of the concerns you mentioned, I meant, but there's another concern, and that is the ethics and how have these women been found who are going to be surrogates, and how are they treated and how are they paid? So there is some of the ethics that I think that intended parents really have to think through when they make a decision to go abroad, if they're going to do that.
I agree with you completely on that. I mean, in general, in the United States, my experience has been, you know, the carriers are not indigent people. They're, you know, middle class. I mean, we've had carriers who were, you know, professionals, you know, nurses, dentists, whatever. So it's I think the concern when you go internationally, like to places like India, is whether you're taking advantage of people who are indigent and are, you know, need the money mm-hmm. to survive, and it's forcing them to do things that maybe they don't even want to do. So I would agree with you completely there.
In fact, many of the agencies that recruit surrogates, one of the things they look at is, does the woman have, is she doing it only for money, or does she have right. a reasonable income? Let's be honest, I think money is a factor for many people choosing to be a surrogate. But there are other factors as well. Oftentimes, there are people who have enjoyed their pregnancy. And oftentimes, it's people who have had a connection with someone who is infertile. And they have some appreciation for the pain and anguish that is, quite frankly, infertility. So I think some of those are also reasons here, just as an aside. Let me pause for a moment to remind you that this show is brought to you in part through the generous support of our partners. These are organizations and clinics that believe in our mission of providing unbiased, medically accurate information to the patient community. We could not be doing what we do without their support, and we thank them. One such partner is Walgreens and Alliance RX Walgreens Prime. They provide specialized fertility pharmacy services through an experienced care team that is available 24/7, and they are devoted to helping patients achieve successful outcomes. They understand the importance of timing and the need for personalized treatment, and they are committed to compassionate care and support throughout a patient's journey to have a family. All right, so now let's move into the juice here, and that is, how is COVID-19 impacting. So let's talk about, let's just talk in general about, I'm going to divide it up between how it may be impacting Americans seeking surrogates here in the U.S. And then we're going to talk about people from abroad coming to the U.S. And then we're going to talk about Americans going abroad. So let's start by, you are an American citizen and you are you have found a surrogate and you want to move forward. So why is COVID-19 even an issue, or is it?
I think even before you say they want to move forward, the first question is, should they move forward? I think many of our patients who are using a carrier, you know, had second thoughts initially about, is this a good time to be doing this process? Because, you know, it's a little bit different when you're carrying your own pregnancy to protect your baby against COVID. So, you know, you can lock yourself in your house during the whole pregnancy and, you know, protect your baby as well. With a carrier, there's a bit of a leap of faith there.
Yeah, there is.
I was going to say, if somebody's living in a hotspot and you know, they are, you know, essential workers, or they, you know, they have to get out of their house and do things, it's a time where they could be putting themselves at risk. And we know that pregnancy is considered a high risk state for COVID infection. The severity of the illness may be worse. So, you know, I think it does require, you know, a lot of thought before deciding to go forward specifically with this versus just any fertility treatment, because you're really dependent on somebody else to protect your baby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And add to that, that the majority of surrogates have children that they are parenting. And as such, these children may be going to school. So they're not even able, if they wanted to completely segregate themselves from anybody who might be contagious or might be coming down with the virus.
Right. But as far as the first thing is just whether to do it or not. But okay. In general, what are the issues that come up? Obviously, the whole COVID pandemic has created an incredible amount of stress for all of our patients and for all of us as well. But, you know, this specifically has additional stresses and challenges. Mainly, I think that the issues related to travel restrictions has been the biggest issue, because, you know, there are lots of states where, I know in Connecticut, where I practice, the list of like 30 something states where you have to quarantine if you come into Connecticut. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that number is increasing, although I think Connecticut's now getting its own problems. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But, you know, the concerns as far as quarantining, you know, you're supposed to quarantine for 14 days if you come from a state where there's a high infection rate. Testing, you know, there's ways around it by doing testing. But, you know, from the standpoint of initially setting up the evaluation of the carrier, screening and testing, which is usually in the past done at our facility, now many times has to be done somewhere local to where they are because they just can't get here. And similarly, we're actually going to come for the transfer of embryos, you know, that's can create a problem. So a lot of intended parents now are kind of looking for carriers who are within driving distance, because it's, you know, the concerns with air travel at one point were really very bad. So we've had patients drive from the Midwest to the East Coast, you know, 15 hours or something to do their procedures because they didn't want to get on an airplane. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's made it difficult for the carriers and the intended parents to meet person to person. I think that's one of the things that we really like them to be able to do in the past, was to sit down, have lunch, talk to each other, get to know each other, because it is a very important relationship they have to develop, which, you know, on Zoom is not really as good. You just can't really get a feel for things. And the meetings, they typically meet with a counselor who serves as a guide for them to interact and evaluate them. And even that's being done on Zoom. So, you know, it's made the evaluation much more difficult. The comfort of the intent parents with the carriers is much more difficult mm-hmm. to develop. And then the actual process is more difficult to accomplish as far as screening, testing, and the ultimate transfer of the embryo.
Mm-hmm. And it is harder. The essence of a surrogacy relationship is trust. You are the surrogate has to be having faith and trust in the intended parents. And vice versa, the intended parents have to have a lot, put a lot, this person is carrying their child. And so there's, and without having the meeting and without having an ability to really, and you're right, it could be done over Zoom, but it's not the same. And so I can imagine that that developing a relationship based on trust would be, it could be done, but it's going to be a little more complicated.
Right.
A little more intention has to be put into it.
Right. So within the United States, I think it's more doable. I mean, for people who are going abroad or people abroad coming here, that's just magnified dramatically because the travel is so much more difficult.
Right. So let's talk about that. Yeah.
I mean, I had a patient in London who wanted to do this and they just can't get over here. So they're just putting things off until afterwards because it's just the travel is so difficult. And I think there's also, you know, the biggest concerns are what happens once the baby's born. You know, attending delivery is not possible. Many hospitals, they don't allow visitors or they limit the visitors, to who can attend. So the intended parents whose baby it actually is may not be able to even attend the birth, assuming that they can even get to where they have to go. So, you know, there's also what happens to the baby if the parents can't get there. So, you know, I think the attorneys right now, because of COVID, are working with patients to come up with plans for who's going to take care of the baby if you can't get there, like a custodian or somebody, and then financial arrangements, you know, especially if you're dealing with places like India or, you know, somewhere that doesn't have access, they don't have access to the medical care that we have here. The carriers do not have any responsibility. So it's not like the carriers deliver the baby and then they're responsible to take care of the baby until the intended parents arrive. They don't have that responsibility. So the intended parents really have to come up with a system for what happens, can't get there, who's going to take care of the baby until they pick the baby up.
And that would be the case both with people from other countries coming to the U.S., but also for U.S. citizens seeking a surrogate abroad.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how is that being worked out? Now people may be postponing it for fear of this problem, but what's happening to the people who are already involved in the surrogacy and the babies are being born now?
Well, as I said, I think if they had foresight and arranged for something to be done, they would have had to arrange, you know, and I'm sure it's incredibly expensive to hire someone to take care of your baby internationally. For weeks or a month or whatever it is, whatever time it would take. But I think that's what has to be done. And I haven't heard of any situations where babies had to go to orphanages or something. But, you know, there have been news reports of babies who were kind of trapped in internationally that can't get picked up. So I think that it is a problem that exists. I haven't heard about it lately. I think travel restrictions maybe have eased up a bit, but it's definitely a concern still.
Definitely. But a lot of those babies have already been born. And I think a lot of people held off. And so we're not having as many surrogate babies being born right now.
I think you're right. Yeah, especially internationally. I think nationally, people have continued to do it. But internationally, I think it's kind of come to a pretty significant slowdown or even halt because of these difficulties right now.
So you're seeing as far as foreigners coming to the U.S. seeking surrogacy, you're seeing a significant decrease in that?
I think it's definitely decreasing. I'm sure there are some places, depending on where they're coming from, who are able to overcome the obstacles. But for many people, I think holding off makes better sense for them.
So what do you see as when do you see it lightening up? And I guess I'm asking you to have a crystal ball because we have no idea when a vaccine will come, when enough people will take the vaccine and all that. But what are you hearing in your doctor circles?
Well, I'm hearing the same uncertainty that you just stated. I think none of us really know. I think the hope is that the vaccine will become widely available and used. But, you know, you're definitely not, it's not happening in the next few months. It's probably 6 to 12 months. You know, for many of these people, they've already created embryos. So, you know, if you separate out the creation of the embryos from the actual use of the carrier, you can remove some of the time concerns. So in other words, somebody's 40 years old, you don't have to put off making their embryos. You just might want to put off putting their embryos into the carrier. So you know, the concerns with age is that their fertility is declining, and you don't want to risk that if you wait 6 months or a year or 2 years that they won't be able to make an embryo that's normal. Most patients do make their embryos, test them for chromosomes to make sure they're chromosomally normal before putting them back through a process called pre-implantation genetic testing. So you can go through that process locally wherever you are, make the embryos, freeze them, test them, find out you have, you know, two or three normal embryos, and then say, okay, I can relax a little bit. I know I have a, you know, 80% chance I'll have a baby based on having three embryos. So I can now relax, mm-hmm. wait for this to end, and then a year or two from now, deal with putting the embryo in and having the baby.
And although the majority of our audience probably knows this, I should throw it out there for those who are listening who may not know it. It is standard practice now to freeze embryos. Our cryopreservation techniques are excellent. And in fact, there are clinics that even if it is, there's no surrogacy involved, but that the standard practice is to freeze all embryos. And there's some good medical reasons why you might want to do that. So freezing your embryos is not out of the normal at all. So what you're recommending is for people to go ahead, create their embryos now, and then when we see the light at the end of the tunnel, which we will, then they can start moving forward with surrogacy. Am I understanding you correctly?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense if you're in a situation where the hurdles are so great. Again, internationally, definitely that makes sense. If it's patients who are, you know, working with someone local, they don't need to do that. And other than the concerns about, obviously the concerns about the baby and exposure to COVID, you know, it wouldn't be a crazy thing to do even in that situation, just from a safety standpoint, to make your embryos and wait. Because it may be 6 months from now, you know, you find out, hey, there's a vaccine, people are taking it, and, you know, the incidence of the disease has gone down dramatically. Now it's safe to go ahead and do this.
And you might as well have separated them so that you've gotten one part of the process already done. And especially if it's your own eggs, time is not on your side, because age is a consideration. So the sooner the better from that standpoint.
Absolutely.
Let me pause for a moment to remind you that this show is brought to you in part through the generous support of our partners. These are organizations and clinics that believe in our mission of providing unbiased, medically accurate information to the patient community. We could not be doing what we do without their support, and we thank them. One such partner is Reproductive Medicine Associates of New York. They are a full-service fertility center specializing in vitro fertilization, egg donation, egg and embryo freezing, LGBTQIA family building, reproductive surgeries, and male reproductive medicine. Highly individualized patient care is offered through 13 reproductive endocrinologists and fertility specialists, and a urologist, as well as a full support team. By combining the latest innovations in reproductive sciences with compassionate and customized treatment plans, RMA of New York is able to provide the very best possible care. So anything else that we need to know about the impact of COVID-19 on surrogacy?
Well, I think it's, as I mentioned before, I think the biggest issue is the stress that people are undergoing. I've had patients, you know, in tears on the phone with me because, you know, this has really created such a block to what they had planned. I mean, yeah. You know, everyone's got a plan for life. They want to have kids by a certain age. They, you know, they're all in the process of making plans to do something to start a family. And this has come between them and that plan. And it's incredibly stressful. It brings patients to tears. They don't want to have to be forced to make a decision because, do I take chance that I'm going to have a problem? What if the carrier gets infected? I mean, you know, it's really a difficult decision to make. And I don't end having to make those personal decisions because I think it's incredibly stressful and difficult. And, you know, my hope is that this just resolves as quickly as it can so people aren't suffering with those decisions.
Yeah. And just to throw out that almost no one, there is surrogacy is almost no one's first plan. That's not plan A. So these are people who are probably on plan, not B, but plan D, E, F, or maybe even X, Y, and Z. And when this hits, it's just one more as my mother would have said, one more damn thing to be thrown in to, you know, to just mess up. And it's a lot. It's a lot for people to have to go through. So, yeah, I'm here with you. I am hoping that I do believe there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I just think that we're not sure of how far down in the tunnel that light is. So for those people who are facing this, please know we're thinking about you, and we're sorry you're in this position. Okay, guys, now it's the time that I get to ask you for a favor. As you know, or at least I hope you know, Creating a Family is a nonprofit. No, I'm not going to ask you for money, although I do hope if you like this show that you will contribute to our Special Needs Parenting Scholarship Fund at the URL creatingafamily.org/scholarship. But that's not the favor I'm asking you for today. Today it's easier. In fact, it couldn't be easier. All I want you to do is tell your friends about this podcast. Most people find out about podcasts by word of mouth, and we would really, really appreciate your sharing with your friends, both in person and online, about this podcast. They can subscribe on whatever device they listen to podcasts on. So please share the news about this podcast that is dedicated to providing unbiased, expert-based information for your adoption and foster care journey. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Barry Witt, for being with us today to talk about the impact of COVID on surrogacy. Let me remind everybody that the views expressed in this show are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of Creating a Family, our partners, or our underwriters. Also, keep in mind that the information given in this interview is general advice. To understand how it applies to your specific situation, you need to work with your infertility professional. Thanks for joining us today, and I will see you next week.